40 million Americans ages 12 and older, or more than 1 in 7, are addicted to or abuse nicotine, alcohol, and other drugs. That's more than half the number suffering from heart conditions, diabetes, and cancer combined. Experts say while substance abuse is the country's most costly public health problem, at some $467 billion annually, it's also among the most preventable. And considerable headway can be made through public education, school and community-based programming, and early intervention. We'll talk about such initiatives in the Upper Peninsula next on Media Meet. Hello and welcome to WNMU's Media Meet. I'm Bill Hart. Our guests are North Care Network Regional Prevention Coordinator Jerry Shelafo, North Care Substance Abuse Disorder Treatment Coordinator Sandy Chapman, and retired teacher and Grandparents Teach 2 founder and CEO Iris Caters. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
We'll begin with more on the people and organizations represented. North Care Network became a regional entity under the Michigan Mental Health Code in January of 2014 and was designated the UP Prepaid Inpatient Health Plan, sounds like an HMO, am I right? By the State Department of Community Health. So what is the North Care Network's mission and business? How is it organized and who's the target client group?
I think Sandy's going to handle that one.
Yeah, all right. I think in terms of the mission statement, it's probably best if I just read it to you.
Sure.
North Care Network ensures that every eligible recipient receives quality specialty mental health and substance use disorder services and supports through the responsible management of regional resources.
Okay, so we're talking about a managed care program, is that correct?
Correct. Mm-hmm.
What's the client? The client group is everybody, but how does the managed care part come in?
Well, and we specifically manage Medicaid, Healthy Michigan, Liquor Tax, My Health Link, and Block Grant.
Okay.
And so those folks on the CMH side, we're going to be talking more specifically about the SUD side, substance use disorder side.
Sure.
But because that's Jerry and I work on that side.
Okay.
So we manage those services for that population.
Okay. Jerry, can we get a brief description of your duties as regional prevention coordinator for North Care?
My job is to coordinate all of the services that happen throughout the region, which is the Upper Peninsula, for substance use prevention. Mainly our target is youth, but we also go a little bit into in the indicated population where they're starting to have issues. For example, an MIP or a drunk driving charge, those kinds of services.
Okay.
My role is not only managing those contracts, but also training both the coalitions throughout the UP and individuals that are working on their prevention certification.
Wow, okay. Sandy, similar description of the substance abuse disorder treatment.
So if you kind of look at our services as a continuum of care, we are actually trying to develop a recovering-oriented system of care is what it's called on the SUD side,
mm-hmm.
integrating with a mental health because we see that as being kind of more the rule than the exception that there's mental health and substance abuse
they
together.
They cross over quite a bit.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And so I work on enhancing the treatment side of the spectrum of services across the UP. So we manage the UP.
Let's see, Iris, long resume here. You're a retired teacher, mm-hmm. founder and CEO of Grandparents Teach 2. Your column on preschool education appears in 100 newspapers. And you host a regular Grandparents Teach 2 segment, Learning Through the Seasons, I guess it's called, on preschool learning activities broadcast in WNMU-FM. You also happen to be part owner of several drugstores,
mm-hmm.
is that correct?
Yes.
How did you become engaged in the effort to address youth substance abuse?
I was a middle school teacher and high school teacher for many years,
mm-hmm.
as well as early elementary, and I started to notice that many of my students were dying of overdose. And you'd think, well, not in Marquette, Michigan, or not in Green Bay, Wisconsin, where I was, but
yeah.
17. I have lost 17. And then I started noticing in the paper, in the obituary, that 52 people this in 1 year died. Well, that's an average of one a week. And then one of our pharmacists came to me and she said, I spent 7 years of my life preparing to be a pharmacist to help people who are in agony with cancer, who have diabetes and so many other illnesses, and Iris, do something. This whole drug thing is a mess. And then my family had an earthquake happen. Okay. My nephew was all set to go to Princeton University. His mom went upstairs to check on him and found that he was slumped over his books with a heroin needle stuck in his vein. And he was dead. And then other members of the family were involved and actually supplied the heroin. So I felt I had to become aware, as many of us do, educate myself. I've spent about 4 years getting educated on this, mm-hmm. and get involved and take some action. So it would seem like someone who does preschool information, a lot of research there, wouldn't get involved. But when you spend all this time helping a child get ready for school and become a great school, preschool student, and then from a good family, something like this happens, mm-hmm. it's time for all of us to wake up.
Sure. Let's get a sort of a landscape view of the problem around the state and where we live. The Michigan High School Youth Risk Behavior Survey has students respond to questions related to their contact with alcohol and other drugs. From what you know, how reliable is the survey, and how do we know? How do we test it?
From research, and that's what most of our information is going to be coming from, is research.
Okay.
But from research, we know that youth will, if they're promised anonymity, they'll respond to surveys quite honestly.
Okay.
There are, of course, few kids that don't, and there are checks and balances for that.
Okay.
For example, if a child's asked in one part of the survey, what age did you start using, and they say 10 or something, and then another part of this survey asks, do you use, and they say they never have, that's going to be a survey that's thrown out because it's not going to be reliable.
Okay.
So that's how we make sure
that... There's a fairly high mm-hmm. coefficient of reliability.
Yep.
Okay.
Exactly.
The survey numbers for 2015 tell a story. 58% of students had tried alcohol, 15% before the age of 13, 26% admit currently using it. Current marijuana use is at 19%, although many have tried it. The non-medical use of prescription drugs stands at almost 16%, and remarkably, over 25% of students have been offered or have sold drugs at school. The survey is statewide. How do those numbers hold up for the UP?
Well, currently we're working on getting more data for just the UP.
Okay.
Most of our coalitions, or many of our coalitions, are working on that. They're new coalitions, so they're working on that piece right
sure.
now. But as far as the data that we do have for the coalitions that we do have data for, it's very, I mean, almost all of those numbers are right in the ballpark of what we're seeing in the UP.
Okay. I understand you see substance abuse population in much broader, the youth population, I'm sorry, in much broader terms, including even younger students and all the way to those attending college, right?
Mm-hmm.
The groups can be really different in mm-hmm. some respects. What challenges does this range of young people create in the way programs are designed and operated?
Well, and I think, I mean, Jerry can address the prevention side of it, but certainly we do have adolescent residential inpatient, it's not inpatient, but it's residential treatment.
Okay.
And any kind of specialty population, whether it's youth or women, I mean, we try to really target what is matters to them.
Okay.
So for youth,
mm-hmm.
it would be obviously their peer group. For women and children, for example, relationships are very important, so we try to address that and their families. So what we try to do is to engage them.
So it's really a case-by-case kind of thing?
It is. We do individualized treatment plans all the time because everybody's different. And I think, you know, with the kinds of drugs that people are using these days, there's the kind of one-size-fits-all isn't really working anymore, and we have to really be very careful about how we go about providing services for people. So
I see. Alcohol abuse across all age groups appear to remain the nation's biggest substance problem. It's the third leading lifestyle-related cause of death in the United States, and it accounts for tens of thousands of ER visits for people under 21. It's so common. How do most students you've contacted view it next to the illicit drugs that make the headlines?
Sandy has a really good example that she just spoke about the other day. The youth that you were telling us about, where it was more common for kids to,
I think really what's happening now is for the first time that we've been taking data as far as treatment for the Upper Peninsula from the PIHP side is we have now surpassed with opiate use for people coming into services more so than alcohol. Okay. And I happened to be in the parking lot, and one of my colleagues' sons had missed his ride, and I said, "Oh, I'll give you a ride." And as we were driving, I explained to him what I did, and he said, "Well, that's really interesting." He said, "Because my friends now are more likely to be taking something out of a cabinet and using that." So he was probably a young adult, probably not, I don't know that he was 21. Mm-hmm. And because, we can get a good high, no one can, we can't get picked up for drunk driving, we don't look like we're doing anything wrong. And he said, that's what people are using nowadays.
And after all, it must be safe because a doctor prescribed it.
Exactly.
Right?
Yes, but not for them. Yes. It's probably for their grandmother who has terrible pain, mm-hmm. From arthritis. Or something else. And the interesting data that I learned from a pharmacy convention is that people who use opioids are 40 times more likely to turn to heroin than let's say another drug.
An alcohol.
Alcohol, two times more likely to turn to heroin.
Okay.
Cocaine, 15 times more likely. And and with marijuana, three times more likely to turn to heroin, because the marijuana today has 90% THC. It's very different from the 1960s marijuana.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about that. Let's go back in the opioid thing for a minute. I checked the Michigan adolescent substance abuse facts with the Department of Health and Human Services, and Michigan was lower than the national average on almost every measure, but it was dead even at 6% for adolescents who use pain relievers for non-medical reasons. Now, opioids are widely prescribed, difficult to control once they're dispensed. They're highly addictive. It's reported the increase in abuse is dramatic in recent years. You're saying that in terms of youth substance abuse, it's surpassing alcohol, though?
That's what we're seeing.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Just wanted to make sure that was clear. We were talking about, Iris was talking about marijuana. Momentum is building for recreational marijuana legalization in Michigan, while many residents have secured cards for medicinal use. 2015 poll showed 56% of voters favor legalization for adults 21 and older. Now the USDEA appears to be bending, at least in the direction of long overdue medical research. A legalization measure missed the Michigan ballot this year on a technicality, virtually. Mm-hmm. Is it problematic getting through to parents and students on potential problems for youth as opinions appear to be changing on marijuana?
Well, what we're seeing is that the research is telling us, I'm going to talk a little bit about the research first, that a young person's brain is developing until they're age 25. And when we were growing up, we didn't know that yet. With these new developments in brain scans, we can see that a youth using marijuana has major changes in their brain in cognitive.
Is it a change in some kind of colloidal something?
Well, what they're telling us, it's the way that the synapses are firing.
Okay.
That's not the right way to say it. Synapses are firing. And it can make permanent changes. So some of these changes that we're seeing and they can see on brain scans now are irreversible. And like Ira said, the THC is just that much higher in marijuana now than it was before.
Yeah, marijuana in the 60s was 10 to 15% THC. And now they can synthesize it to be 90 or so percent. So there's quite a bit of difference. But it's not only the brain. It's also, I just read a study yesterday, how they feel that the heart muscles are affected. And also, of course, if you're taking in ash, if you're taking in materials that shouldn't be there into your lungs we're going to see lung cancer developed.
So back to the question about legalizing it, is my worry is that if it becomes legal, it'll be easier for youth to get than it even is now.
That's what we're talking, that seems to be
For me, because I do the treatment side of it, one of the difficulties I have in terms of helping people with recovery is that I can get them when if they do advance to a more extreme case of addiction, that I can get them into services, I can get them into treatment. But you know, one of the concerns is because it's still a Schedule I and it's a felony, I have a lot of people that have a lot of drug legal problems, and so I can't get them into housing, I can't get them jobs, I can't get them into education. You can't get a loan if you've got a marijuana charge on you. So I mean, I think that kind of whole, there's a lot of money that goes into the criminalization of it, where I think there's got to be some way of looking at it as a disease and making sure that we're working.
I can see a problem with enforcement, but even just with identification. If you look at sources now, where people might have to go somewhere else to pick up these things. Mm-hmm. Now they, with the legalization of marijuana coming up and the use of opioids and everything, it appears people are mostly getting this at home, right? Frequently getting it.
Yes. However, Jermaine Galloway from Idaho came to Marquette and gave some talks to law enforcement, and he looked at our community, and he went around, and he said, "You've got everything needed here to have easy access for students. Mm-hmm. You've got vape shops. The kids have money, more money than a lot of inner city kids." Okay. You've got a college, you have cash doctors, you have hydroponic stores, you have FedEx, UPS, so it can be ordered from off the net from China and Mexico. You have great highways that lead right to Chicago, Green Bay, Milwaukee. So we've got everything here in the UP to make it very dangerous for kids.
Okay. The federal government is stepping up enforcement of mental health parity under the Affordable Care Act. You mentioned that there's a considerable overlap between substance abuse and mental health problems under the Affordable Care Act, but it's reported that states still differ on what gets covered. How are we doing here, and is it relevant to the youth substance abuse cases?
I think part of our issue, I mean, the parity is one issue, but the other thing is it's just very difficult to keep the workforce knowledgeable and educated and employed. I've been working some with Northern here in trying to have some kind of a program or more educational substance abuse in the actual fields that you're, like the social work. I mean, I know masters of social work people who come out with no substance abuse training. So like we have providers that are without employees because they cannot find a qualified person to do that. Okay. So we have the services, I think, and we can do more of the services. We have to just get more of the workforce.
Okay. I'd like to remind our viewers and especially our radio listeners that we're talking about youth substance abuse with North Care Network Regional Prevention Coordinator Jerry Schellefo, North Care Substance Abuse Disorder Treatment Coordinator Sandy Chapman, and retired teacher and grandparents Teach 2 founder and CEO Iris Caters. The Centers for Disease Control in August awarded Michigan $2.25 million to combat the effects of illicit opioid use. Michigan saw a fourfold increase in these poisonings from 1999 to 2014. State is reportedly taking action by focusing on community prevention. That's what we're here about. Are you seeing some of those funds?
I think we're seeing those funds, but I think the Upper Peninsula is a very interesting place to try to. I mean, we have such a large area with lack of transportation. I mean, we have providers that try to go to smaller cities, and it's very difficult to keep the clientele engaged. And so, because we're fee for service, it becomes a financial issue for folks. And this population is pretty difficult to engage. So, I mean, trying to get home-based workers. We've just trained some peers that could be a community support for people to get them back and forth. But so the money's there. It is tied to some strings. I mean, there are definitely some requirements to be able to spend it, but it's also just getting that workforce built back up again and to be able to, do what we need to do here.
I see. On the prevention side, Jerry, what can you tell us about Communities That Care?
So Communities That Care is actually a model for coalition building, and it focuses on the individual community, so it's not a one-size-fits-all. It's data-driven, so the community is taught how to look at their own data and choose the risk and protective factors that are most prominent in their community, and then choose prevention programs that should be delivered in that.
Great.
Yeah, in their community. All of the programs that they look at will be evidence-based, so we know that they'll work if they're done with Fidelity.
Yeah.
So that's one of the biggest parts of it. Another big part is what we call the social development strategy, and it's making sure that youth have not only opportunities, but they're, you know, I mean, it would be like asking a child to cut your grass and not ever teaching them how to use a lawnmower. You know, I mean,
okay,
making sure that they get the skills they need, then they're given opportunities and they're allowed to use those skills. And we tend to not like to do that with kids. We like to give them the easy jobs so that they are not engaged and it's just a job that for to them. So that's okay. Another piece of it. But Communities at Care can also focus on other things besides substance use, teen pregnancy, school dropout, violence, anxiety and depression.
Mm-hmm.
So all of those things can be targeted with Communities at Care.
I see. It can be tough to reach students who tend to be highly influenced by their peers anyway on things like alcohol and drug issues. But a PSA contest that's a public service announcement, that includes middle, high school, and college students appears to be an effort to get them thinking, communicating, and reaching out to the community.
Yes.
Tell us about that,
Iris. It's something
we're
very excited about because it's part of Communities That Care. It's something that we're going to work for. But we know that students, when guided research is available to them, mm-hmm. they search for information, work in teams, then produce a product that can be shared to do some good.
Okay.
That is the way to communicate to students. So not only are they getting information themselves, but they're also producing a product that they can share with others to give information about substance abuse. And
mm-hmm.
the program this year is called I Can, and it mm-hmm. comes from a Salt Lake City program.
Okay.
I can either stay off drugs in the first place because I have so many things that I want to do with my life.
All right.
Or I can, if I'm already on a substance, I can get off of it with help and I can find help and my peers will help me do that. And so we have the contest going right now, and although it's Marquette County and we have about 25 teams all set to go from middle school, high school, and NMU, we are still searching for money, for prize money, so
okay.
people can donate to that.
All right.
And other counties can certainly do this, but it's only been since August.
Yeah, it looks like something could be replicated all
Absolutely.
The way across the UP,
Absolutely.
For example.
Yes.
And you were showing the past winners, and I was very moved by it. I mean, it brought me to tears. For 30 seconds what these kids did,
yeah.
it was like
yeah.
incredible.
30 to 60 seconds.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
For example, a youth that falls into a pool and is mm-hmm. drowning, and they have underwater cameras, and these are high school kids producing these. And then there is a message pulling him out, pulling mm-hmm. the student out of the pool as he's drowning, and that, you know, we're going to help you through this, and we're going to stick by you, and you're going to be all right so that you can have a productive life.
Okay. I'd like to talk about another one. There's a move to bring a broad array of agency organizations and families together, I know, in a series of community meetings called The Cost of Addiction. I saw sheriff's deputies, community, social workers, all kinds
Treatment
of people
providers.
Involved, mm-hmm. parents. What's the concept, and what do you hope to accomplish that way?
Iris was part of the planning committee of this, so I'm going to let her field this one.
Well, it's called Cost of Addiction,
a lot of stakeholders,
as you said.
Yeah.
And the first meeting is going to be January 18th at the Alternative School in Marquette, and everybody's invited, families, students. You don't have to be from Marquette, certainly.
Okay.
And Andrew Crunkleton, the principal there, is a spearheader of all of this. And so we're going to have a general panel, but it's going to be every month, and we're going to have a focus. And on the meeting in March is going to be mm-hmm. the awarding of the PSA video winners.
Okay.
And we'll be showing them and, be getting
How
to show them.
How can people get information about this if they wanted to participate?
Well, watch for it and listen for it. It's going to be all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want some more information, I'm putting my website out, my email out, site out there,
okay.
grandparentsteach@gmail.com. And I'm in the phone book, and you can call me, and I'm happy to talk to anybody who wants more information.
Okay. We might also mention a program premiering in Escanaba through the police department called The Angel.
Yes.
Is that what it's called?
Yes.
I'm told you're clear to give us just a glimpse of that.
Yes, I am. I guess I've been on the phone a lot. But I was able to contact the Escanaba City Police, and they are the first place in Michigan to do this, and it's patterned after a program out east. And what happens is an addict comes in, or his family comes in with the addict,
mm-hmm.
and the person turns in the paraphernalia, turns in the substances. They are not arrested,
okay.
and they are immediately put in the hands of an angel who will take that person to a place for treatment.
Okay.
So again, it's treating this as a disease.
Sure.
Because 25% of the people have brains that really are so susceptible to addiction.
Okay. I'd like to bring up one more point. We've only got about a minute to go here. We've noted that the U.S. spends $467 billion a year on these problems, but experts report that for every federal and state tax dollar spent, only 2 cents goes to prevention and treatment. The rest is spent on addressing other consequences.
Mm-hmm.
Is that changing, do you think?
Well, I don't know that it's changing, but like Sandy kind of mentioned earlier, I think we have the funds to do what we need to do.
Okay.
I think we can get moving and get going with what we have.
Good. One more, if we've got, how much time do we have? Just a minute. Okay, is there a program approach or specialty we don't have or don't have enough of that you could use right now?
I mean, I think getting a workforce together and, transportation, some of the logistics done, because you aren't going to get people using these services if they can't get to them or they can't, we don't have, I'd like to see more home-based for some of the more clearly addicted people that are really struggling with, transitional housing and, places where they just don't have the support they need. They can go to treatment, but they go back to using homes, and I'd love to see transitional housing, more peers, better transportation, and people who are willing to employ and give these folks a chance.
Okay, I'm afraid we have to leave it there. We've been talking about youth substance abuse in the Upper Peninsula with North Care Network Regional Prevention Coordinator Jerry Schellefo, North Care Substance Abuse Disorder Treatment Coordinator Sandy Chapman, and retired teacher and Grandparents Teach 2 founder and CEO Iris Caters. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
I'm Bill Heyer. Thanks for joining us on Media Meet.
The preceding program was produced in studios located in the Edgar L. Hardin Learning Resources Center by WNMU-TV, Northern Michigan University Public Television.